Where warp meets weft. Where warp meets weft. This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Welcome to Weavecast. This episode is all about those wonderful weaving periodicals that inspire and delight us. We're going to talk to Madeline Vanderhoot of Handwoven, Jean Scorgi from Weaver's Craft, and Tina Inganel of Vav Magasinet. We discuss a summer reading list of fiction books that feature weavers. And finally, I share the details of a torrid summer love affair I've been having. It took a while, but summer has finally come to the Pacific Northwest. After a really bleak and rainy 50-degree June, July has opened with gorgeous 70-degree weather and brilliant blue skies. And I was really relieved because I was worried that it would rain on my son's birthday and I would have 19 preschool-aged children running around inside my small house. But fortunately, it was a beautiful sunny day. I want to thank all of you for cutting me some slack about getting the June podcast out so that I could finish the playset for Kai's birthday. And if you want to know how that went, I have blogged about it on a new blog that I've started called Weavecast Backstage. The idea from this blog came from a listener. I got a request that I take the podcast weekly. And it was very flattering because you know the impetus for this request is that somebody is really enjoying the show and just wants more of it. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of work to make one of these episodes, especially like today's episode where I'm interviewing three different people on multiple continents. I don't see how, being a one-woman show, I could do a radio program every week, but I could certainly do a blog a couple of times a week. So Weavecast Backstage tells the adventures of what I'm making and doing between episodes. It's got a little bit about behind the scenes of podcasting. It's got my own personal craft work. So if you want a little bit more Weavecast in your month, please check that out. It's available at blog.weavecast.com. I serendipitously ran across a cool tool for weavers and other fiber artists. Part of the way I earn money is I do web development. I ran across a tool for web designers that helps them pick cool color palettes for their sites. It's called Color Cache 4. And it's got this feature called Palette Builder, where you pick one color and then it uses 22 different artistic color theory strategies to build attractive patterns off that color. It uses things like contrasting harmony, equidistant third, light ramp. I have no idea what these terms mean. I just know what I like. And that's why I love this tool, because you pick a color and then you see all 22 variations of like 3 to 5 colors that coordinate with that color. The program is a free download and you can use it free for 15 days. After that, they want you to pay for it. Of course, that's fair. But you could plan out your whole next year's worth of color in that 15 days. If you are like me, a color novice, someone who doesn't intuitively know how to put together attractive colors, it's a great tool for painlessly trying out a whole bunch of color combinations with just a single click of a button. This being the beginning of summer, I thought it would be fun to have a summer reading list for weavers. I've been collecting a list of fiction books that feature weavers as characters or weaving as a main theme in the book. The first book I ran across is Wintersmith by Terry Pratchett. Now, I will confess that the weaver in this book, although a very vibrantly painted and interesting character, she's not the main character in the book. But I love anything written by Terry Pratchett. He is my comfort reading. He writes humorous fantasy that has heart and great messages embedded in just a rollicking fun story. Wintersmith is technically young adult, but I read a lot of young adult. I love young adult. In fact, looking at what's out there right now, some of the most inventive and best writing is actually happening in young adult. I strongly recommend anything by Terry Pratchett. And if you want something weaverly by Terry Pratchett, check out Wintersmith. I will caution you that Wintersmith is the third of a series. So you should probably start with We Free Men and A Hat Full of Sky before you dive into Wintersmith. Though, I believe if you just started with Wintersmith, you'd still be fine. The next book I've mentioned on the show before, it's Aviel of Rhea by Dia Calhoun. The main character in the book is a weaver, and the way she does the magic in this fantasy novel is through weaving. So weaving is a constant theme throughout, and it's a fun read. Now, this third book I kind of hesitated to recommend. It's The Last Mortal Man by me. I didn't really think of it as a weaving book, but one of the members of the Seattle Weavers Guild wrote it up as a book review for the recent newsletter and surprised me with that. And it tickled me pink because she brought out the fact that in The Last Mortal Man, I talk a lot about futuristic fabrics and how they change in response to the wearer's emotions and moods and the situation. I have clothing that's able to resize itself. I'm talking about nanotechnology in the book. Even though it's far future, I also work in a sheep shearing scene with hand blades. And there is a brief description of a young woman courting a man by weaving his initials into a linen handkerchief and leaving it for him anonymously. I don't have an unbiased opinion of the book, but other people have read it and found it an enjoyable read and with a lot of fibery interest. If science fiction and fantasy aren't your thing, check out Silas Marner, The Weaver of Ravelot. This is a novel by George Eliot, which was published in 1861, and it tells the story of a weaver who's been disappointed in life, and he moves to a remote village. One day, a young child appears at his door, and he takes her in, and that changes his life in unanticipated ways. I'm working my way through this book now and enjoying it quite a bit. I found two gorgeous kids' picture books. You know that my little boy is four, and so I'm always looking for beautiful books that subtly introduce the theme of weaving, perhaps just to plant a few seeds here and there. My favorite thus far is Pelle's New Suit, and this is by Elsa Besko. She's a Swedish writer in the 1930s, and it is gorgeously illustrated. Beautiful watercolor paintings, kind of that Art Deco, Art Nouveau, just a lovely, lovely book. The story is about a boy named Pelle who owns a lamb, and Pelle, being a growing boy, outgrows his current suit. So he shears his lamb himself. He barters with one grandmother to card the wool, another grandmother to spin the wool. He barters with his mother to weave the cloth, and he's exchanging things like watching their cows or digging roots out of their garden. So he's working to earn his new suit. There are gorgeous pictures of the spinning and the carding and the weaving. Step by step, Pelle works with other people collaboratively to create his new suit. And at the end, there's a picture of him with his lamb, and he's wearing the new suit, and the lamb is bawing, and it sounds like laughter. It's a very sweet and gentle and gorgeous book. I highly recommend it. Another one that I found in a friend's library is called Sophie's Masterpiece. Now, I was helping my friend move, so I didn't have a chance to sit down and read the book cover to cover. But it's the story of a spider with artistic talents for weaving transparencies. She's a young spider, and when she goes out into the world, she ends up at a boarding house where her artistic talents are not respected. And I'm not sure how the book ended, because that's when I had to put it away and help pack. It, again, was gorgeously illustrated, a beautiful children's book. It's about a spider, but it's not a scary book at all. It's a sweet spider. So those are some ideas of weaverly fiction. I know this is not a comprehensive list. These are just books I stumbled across in my daily life. What I would just really love is if you know of a book that I haven't mentioned that features weaving or weavers, please tell me about it in the comments for Weavecast, because I'm going to be looking for some summer reading. And if you leave it in the comments, not only will I be able to enjoy it, but other listeners will as well. I've spent the last month talking to editors of various weaving magazines around the world. I don't know about you, but I subscribe to them all. I mean, there aren't that many weaving publications, so when I find out about a new one and it's a good one, I subscribe. And when one of these magazines comes in the mail, it's always like a little present to myself that I've already paid for, and I just love that. I save them up for the end of the day when I've got all my work done, and I sit down and read them cover to cover. I love the pictures and the stories and the projects because that gives me ideas for things I want to weave. I don't usually follow a project verbatim, but I always get an idea or a little trick or some color inspiration from seeing what other people are weaving. And I love looking at projects and figuring out how to make them my own. Coming up first, we have an interview with Madeline Vanderhoot of Handwoven. Last episode, we heard her talking about her experiences as a teacher. This episode, we're going to talk to her about her experiences as the editor of Handwoven.
When did you start writing about weaving?
I started weaving in 1981, and I took all of the magazines right away, started amassing my big library. I wove a coverlet in 1983, and I decided it would be really fun to try to write an article about it, and so I did, and that was for the Weaver's Journal. Then after that, I just kept submitting articles and writing.
Did you have writing experience before that?
Well, I was an English teacher. I don't know if you could really say I had writing experience, but I like language. I love the process of trying to put into words some concept that is hard for people to grasp and find the right words that make it possible. All of the words about weaving are everyday vocabulary, like block and pattern and tromp, and there are very few specific words to weaving, like heddle. Weaving language has become a part of regular language, but also regular language has become a part of weaving. You almost can't tell which is which. It wasn't really a subject of academic study anyway. Mm-hmm. It was part of culture. But to tell people how to weave something is not easy. Irene Emery is really the only person who ever made an effort to standardize the language, and she didn't get far into weave structures.
Did she put out a book?
Yes, she wrote The Primary Structures of Fabrics, which was an effort to standardize the vocabulary about all textile construction. And so she has weaving in there, and I try to really follow the way she chose to talk about it. Like, knitting is a one-element structure because mm-hmm. you really have one thread, and weaving would be a two-element structure. So I try to stick to that language, but she's the only person who really took that seriously. Harriet Tidbull did a bit, but didn't get very far. It's so complicated. There's so much. My first articles were for the Weaver's Journal, and then, let's see, I wrote for Handwoven, and then I wrote for Prairie Wall Companion. And when I did that, I met the publisher and editor of Prairie Wall Companion, David Xenakis and Alexis Xenakis, and became friends with them. And eventually, David didn't want to be editor of Prairie Wall Companion anymore. So in 1986, so I'd been weaving 5 years, they needed an editor, and so I became editor of Prairie Wall Companion.
After only weaving for 5 years?
Yeah.
That is cool.
It was an intense 5 years.
Where did weavers come from? I mean, I know...
One of the problems with Prairie Wall Companion was, first of all, the name didn't have anything to do with weaving, necessarily. David's first interest was rigid heddle weaving, so it started out as a rigid heddle magazine, and he is extremely technical and his interests border on the sublime, so that a lot of the things that he wrote about were not easy for other people to understand.
Didn't he use like three
Four heddles. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he treated the rigid heddle loom like a draw loom. I remember sitting in a bus station reading his rigid heddle book and just being blown away by how complicated it was. Prairie Wool Companion had a lot of heavy-duty rigid heddle articles in it. He had a very devoted following, but a lot of people were also put off by its degree of complexity and also by the fact that there aren't that many rigid heddle weavers. So they would put four harness alternative drafts for the rigid heddle, but most people thought of it as a rigid heddle magazine. Then over its years, it developed into being mostly a shaft loom magazine, but a lot of people didn't know it. So Alexis thought that the great thing to do would be to change the name. And he got weavers from cooks. From that idea, he did weavers and knitters. And I think it was a good change, and it was a great magazine. I love all of it.
I mean, even years after it ceased publishing, it's got a devoted following.
Yeah, it does.
On eBay. What happened to weavers?
A lot of things. One of them was during the late 90s, knitting was just going wild. So the publishers, XRX, were really way more involved in knitting than they were in weaving. And I felt that what weavers had been was an exploration of weave structures. And it was really, there was this sort of exciting period where we kept discovering a new weave. It wasn't actually new, but we kept thinking, we would come up, let's go, oh, let's do piquet. Oh, let's do two-tie unit weaves. Oh, let's do lampas. And a lot of those things, those structures had never been part of a real literature for weaving before. But we did them all. We would have just been redoing them. It would have had to have become a real project magazine. It had projects, but it was not a project magazine. It was really, the projects were intended to demonstrate what the structures could do so that people could use them. At the very end, try to imagine what would be the next thing. Would we go back and do overshot again, twill again, lace again? There's no new twill, new lace. At that time, Jean Scorgi was retiring from Handwoven, and they needed an editor. I thought it would be a great thing to make that change. And there was not enough interest on the part of XRX to continue a weaving magazine. They also at that time went into publishing knitting books really well. Mm-hmm. So I would really tell everybody, all the stuff you need is in the weavers' magazines that have already been. The kinds of explorations that are happening with some of those structures that have happened after weavers is all being done by the Complex Weavers, and they can get that material from the Complex Weavers journal, and they shouldn't really need a project. By the time you understand how a structure works, rather than do the project that someone else has set up, you should be creating your own projects. I'm happy that weavers is treasured, but I don't think people really need more of it.
I'm glad you're doing the reprint books.
Yes, I love that. But we're going to try and do them all. I appreciate that XRX is willing to do that, because these are not big money makers. There's only so many weavers out there. I find that when I put those together, every single time, it's like, wow, the whole thing becomes so much clearer, being that cohesive whole. And by the time we finish them, there really won't be anything important in terms of structure we'd have to ever leave out. More planned. The next one's overshot, I think.
So was it a shift moving to Handwoven, which is more of a project?
Yeah, it was definitely a shift, but one I wanted. I didn't know the Handwoven readership as well as I do now. I knew the weavers' readership, and so there's an adjustment period in figuring out what readers really do want. In some ways, we're at a crossroads in weaving where a lot of the people who have been weaving for a long time are now in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. They are the loyal Handwoven subscribers and have every issue since the beginning. Those people want to be stimulated and excited about things. And then we have a new group of weavers who need all the basics. So it's really hard to figure out ways to satisfy all the people who are subscribers, especially since our biggest need is to make new subscribers. We have a really high renewal rate. It's over 80%. That's wonderful, but that means 20%, they're probably not really not renewing. They're stopping weaving. And so we need 20% new people every time just to stay stable, and we really need more than that to grow. And so even though there are new weavers, and it's exciting to see them, like you, it's very exciting to see them, and they come with a passion, but there aren't enough. And to figure out how to get more is our key issue. The rule of thumb for weavers to attract other weavers is to go to county fairs and demonstrate. Interweave tries all the time to figure out ways to show knitters that they might, because they're obviously people who would like a lot of the aspects of weaving, some of them more than others. Spinoff has grown a lot because of its connection to knitting. The knitters discover that they can make cool yarns they can't buy. That's been great for their growth, but it has not translated into more Handwoven subscribers, and maybe they will come through some other vehicle. Like,
what are you trying to accomplish with Handwoven?
Oh, that's a really good question. Our mission statement is to get people to weave. So that's our goal. So how do you do that? What we try to do is to present things that are irresistible to make, and to be a lifeline for people out there to get what they need to keep going and find out more about what's happening. I mean, all that stuff. But if I thought about what am I trying to accomplish personally, I have a certain sense about the integrity of hand weaving that I like to, I don't even know what I mean quite by that, but I know that when I'm preparing a magazine, there's a certain level of both excellence and accuracy and truthfulness that I wanted to have, so that anybody who picked it up in their hands would know that there was going to be good, solid information there, helpful, leading to a better life. In some ways, the medium itself makes that how it is. I mean, weaving is so benign, it doesn't hurt anybody in any way. Almost every process and product we use is pretty kind to the environment. We're not creating pollution. We're making beautiful things out of natural materials for the most part, and even the unnatural materials are not that unnatural. I think that with the kind of community that weavers tend to have with each other, it's all such great stuff. You would like as many people to experience it as possible. I mean, I know knitting, I try to always see, well, what is it about knitting? Is knitting different in this particular way? Knitters have groups, I know, but there's something about weavers have been in groups that have been meeting for 50 years and have a strong sense of family and connection to those groups. And that's another just beautiful part of weaving. It's like when you become a weaver, you become part of a whole family of people who all care about the same thing and care about you.
Yeah, and a huge history, you know.
And a huge history. A huge history that feels like a good kind of history. That feels like the connections have always been good connections. I have the feeling about weaving that there's like no little people or big people. No, everybody is really equal and cared about equally. And maybe that's true in knitting too, I don't know.
Since you're trying to create new weavers, what do you think is like the most compelling reason you would tell someone to encourage them to weave?
I think I'm wanting to say it's a spiritual thing, but I don't really mean spirituality in that sense. I mean, weaving is very meditative, very mentally health-making. That when you're weaving and you're watching the cloth grow and you're just being there with the cloth, you're doing about the best thing any Zen Buddhist would be wanting to do. You're just doing the best thing that you could be doing. You would just would love to have everybody experience that. There'd be a lot less likelihood for people to be going out beating other people up or stealing things, except yarn maybe. if you were spending your time weaving, and you know, well. It's just a good thing, you know. It really is just a good thing.
No, I'm just imagining muggers, you know.
Give
me all your soy
milk. All your yarn. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, that would be good.
How does the process of putting together the handwoven magazine work?
First of all, you have to plan ahead so that you know what you're going to do for each issue of the magazine. I choose to have themes around which to organize an issue. So knowing the theme means that I then know what kinds of things we need to look for. And sometimes I'm also thinking, we haven't had enough stuff that somebody brand new could do. We haven't had enough stuff that features color. I mean, I might think of some sub-elements that we really need in an issue. And we try to have also a variety of types of projects, because some people like clothing, some people like rugs, some people like, they all like different things. So then I solicit articles from people I know who would be able to do some of those things that are, in general, what we need. And I also have people submit articles. And if people want to submit articles, what they need to do is sending digital photographs of things that you weave is the best way to let us know what you are doing. Because then at the time when we decide what's going to be in an issue, we get together all of the photographs that have been submitted and then choose the things that would probably work. And then we have them sent to Interweave, and then the art committee meets there to decide what things really will work. And then we ask the authors to write articles, and they write the articles, and we then go through the editing process. I prepare each article, and then I send it out to two technical editors who go over all the drafts and information. Even though there are two of them and one of me, we don't find all the mistakes. It's so amazingly hard to get everything right. Numbers are just, in weaving, there's so many tiny details.
And all these little dots.
And then you're doing it, you know, in a computer program where you don't see, like half the time the mistakes that happen are because you've selected something and you're moving it somewhere and you don't know that you also have something else selected over there that's moving off screen. And then the page designer gets the color going and does the color correcting of the photography and all that. And then it goes to press.
So what advice would you give to someone who's interested in submitting?
People will sometimes write us and say, I'm interested in doing an article on such and such. And that's nice to know, but we really can't say yes or no about that. All we can say is, yes, we might be interested. And you'd have to just go ahead and take the chance of writing the article and not having it be something workable. If it's a project, then it's good for us to see photos. And they can be photos of something you did weave, and you can say, I'd really love to do this for your such and such issue, but I would do so and so about it. And then we'd say, we would really be interested, but we can't promise. Because sometimes things come in that we thought would be just perfect, and they have really gaping flaws or something that just won't work. Or it's colors that just won't make it at all with the rest of the stuff in the issue. Just send photographs.
Do you prefer those in email?
Actually, now, yes. I used to prefer them hard copy, but now email stuff gets dealt with much faster than the snail mail stuff.
And maximum file size?
You know, I really like to get a good photo because we end up using the photo sometimes that we didn't expect we were going to use, and then the person's lost the original, and yeah, it's better to just go ahead and send them. So I actually prefer the sort of 1 to 2 megabyte size photo.
So you have DSL then?
Yeah, I have DSL, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right, absolutely.
So tell me about the Complete Book of Drafting. What was the motivation behind that?
The Complete Book of Drafting, which someday I hope will be the really complete book of drafting. Actually, the way that started was that Lee Anders, who with her husband Jim was publishing Shuttlecraft Books, became Shuttlecraft Books. They wanted to do a monograph on drafting. They talked to me about it, and I thought about it, and I said, you know, really, there's too much for, you know, monographs are like 40 to 60 pages, most of them. And I thought that there wouldn't be possible really to do that in that small amount of pages. So they said, well, then let's do a book. And so I said, okay. And that was in 1990. So I started working on it, and it became bigger and bigger and bigger because I thought it should really not just be drafting by itself. Drafting is connected to weave structures. It should include how you would deal with every weave structure in draft form. I started working on that, and then it just became a book of weave structures. That's how I think of it. I've covered in there almost all the weave structures. By the time I got as far as I got, I wanted to stop. You know, it's missing a few like warp rep, a few weft-faced weaves, but other than that, it's not missing much. But I would love to expand it to include weaves that it doesn't include and do more about advancing twills and networking that happened after we were able to use the computer in weaving and have it be a little prettier. I don't know if I would do it so much that it wouldn't really be the same book, but yes, I want to have it be more complete. So I'll either do it more complete and then have it be very different and bigger, or just add what's missing and have it be expanded.
You've written a book, you're the editor of Handwoven, you teach. What's next for you?
I think books are what I would want to do next. At some point I will retire from Handwoven, and I'm not sure when that will be, but say in a number of years. Then I think I would like to do either a complete book of structures that was called that, a complete weaving text. Where it could be like, you could have the things you need to know, like from learning to weave, but also the structure background, also stuff on fibers and their properties, you know, a whole text that anybody could use. I think that the weaving texts that we have that attempt to do that don't really cover weave structures very well. They do other stuff, but they don't cover weave structures very well. So that would be the main book I'd want to do. Either change the complete book of drafting into that, or make that part of a bigger book.
Thank you very much.
Well, it was very fun.
And now we have an interview with Jean Scorgi. She is a publishing powerhouse, a one-woman enterprise. She does all of the writing, editing, page layout, and photography for her magazine, Weaver's Craft. Each issue of this magazine is like the chapter of a really good weaving book. She goes in depth into a given weaving technique, describes the technique, and then gives you several projects that use that technique and give you a springboard for ideas of how to use that particular structure in your own weaving.
So welcome, Jean.
Well, thank you, Simon.
What's your background in writing and weaving?
I was editor of Handwoven for about 7 years. Before that, I was teaching hand weaving for many years. When I went to college, I discovered weaving, and then I decided that weaving your own clothes cloth for clothing was more interesting than designing clothing. And so I started to teach weaving and taught weaving for many, many years before putting it down in writing.
You knew how much work there is involved in putting together a magazine. What motivated you to start up your own?
After I left Handle, I got to thinking it would be nice to do something for beginners because I thought of all the samples that were lying in boxes around the world and under beds and in drawers where weavers had tried to learn something by making a sample, and then the sample just got kind of folded up and put away. Sometimes the project got woven, and lots of times it didn't. And so I thought it would really be nice to provide blueprints for weavers to learn a technique and learn while they're making something useful. Once they'd done that, they would understand the technique, and they could take it in any direction that they wanted, rather than making a sample and putting it in a drawer.
I love how you organize each issue around a theme and just really go in depth. It reminds me a lot of what Weavers was like.
Oh, yes. And actually, Shuttlecraft Bulletin that Mary Atwater did, too. She did a little folded publication. Hers was just in black and white back then with the drafts, and she would talk about a different weave structure and then provide some ideas for things. And that had been in the back of my mind, too, that it'd be nice to, rather than kind of a shotgun approach to saying, well, we'll do a little bit of this and that and the other thing, to go through some weaves that I like and that I enjoy and I think have possibility for weavers and do them as units in an issue. Compared to countries that have a history of weaving that they pass down from one generation to another, in the United States, most weavers don't learn in an organized fashion. Somebody will show them how to make a warp and thread a loom, and then from there, the first thing they weave might be for one person twill, another person overshot, another person might start with summer and winter. They might just have an approach that would leave gaps in their knowledge and understanding of how weave structures work and how weave structures are interrelated. I felt that if you had more understanding about what was possible with a weave structure, especially in the simple weave structures, because I think that a lot of people in a rush to be a wonderful hand weaver think that they need to have an 8-harness loom or a 16-harness loom or a jacquard loom, and so they tend to skip over some of these really wonderful, enjoyable weave structures and textures that you can do with just
Well, give me an example of what you think is an underutilized simple weave structure.
For instance, straight twill. Threading the loom, 1, 2, 3, 4. At one time, I had realized from my reading that in a number of different books written by weavers, that they would say, here's some interesting things that you can also treadle on straight twill. I collected a group of these little books and kind of compared the different tie-ups that they're using, the different treadling sequences they're using, and then I sat down and said, okay, which of these are actually the same and which are different, and then came up with something like over 100 different ways that you could get different textures just with threading loom 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm sure there are even more than that that look really wonderful. It just occurred to me that there are weave structures we kind of take for granted. Well, we thread things in twill, and then we weave plain weave or weave twill. Well, we could also weave broken twill, and then that's about it. Oh, yeah, we could weave basket weave, and then that's it. Well, actually, there are two-sided fabrics, and there are ribbed fabrics, and there are all sorts of interesting textures that you can do with just four-shaft straight twill. I had done a little sampler like this, and it was in hand-woven. I had this long strip of cloth I used to take around to workshops and say, see, you can do all these wonderful things. And then in Weaver's Craft, I took that same type of information and then recast it in towels that you could weave, and they have horizontal bands so that you weave only about, oh, I don't know, 3 inches of one texture, and then you do a little kind of basket weave in plain color, and then use another stripe color and weave another variation in treadling. So instead of, again, having a sampler, which you could do the whole thing like I did as a sampler, but you could also do this as a wonderful set of towels that could be color coordinated and have all these different weave structures showing. Find your favorites and write those down and do whole projects with them.
While you're washing your hands, you can be inspired for your next weaving project.
That's another really good point about doing useful textiles. When you weave useful textiles, you not only get to see them on the loom, but as you use them, you are able to look at it each time you use it. And rediscovering the variety of textures in those weave structures you've used over time as you're using it really enhances your ability to understand weave structure and appreciate it. Kitchen towels are wonderful because you use them up and wear them out, and then you can always use more. One of the real joys of life is having all of your beautiful textiles that you've made and having them part of your life.
Now, you made an interesting choice with your magazine not to take advertisements, which is kind of a financially risky choice. What was your motivation there?
Handling advertisements and the time and effort it would take, it just didn't seem to me to be the point of why I was doing it.
You also write all of the content for Weaver's Craft.
Right. I come up with the ideas, and of course, they're not all good ideas. And then I make samples, and of course, they're not all good samples. And then I put together what I think will be a good issue, and of course, that always doesn't quite go the way that I think, or takes longer, I should say, sometimes than other times till I decide what really should go in the issue.
Is it ever hard coming up with ideas for the next issue?
It's not hard coming up with ideas, because ideas are just all over the place. Coming up with ideas that really work well, or people will look at it and say, oh, no, I'd like to weave that, that's a little bit more challenging, but that's a good challenge.
Do you plan out the next year's worth of issues?
I have a list of topics that I would like to go through. And when I started, I thought, well, basically what I want to do is more or less cover everything that I enjoy. And then I just, by my nose, decide, well, now, what would be next? What have I done in the past couple of issues, and what ought to come next to be a nice mix of topics that people might enjoy?
Well, as a subscriber, I really enjoy the in-depth way you approach each subject, and I always learn something with each magazine. Do you have a favorite weave structure?
Some of the first weave structures that I got interested in weaving when I first started still remain my favorites. I've always been interested in double weave. When I started out weaving, well, that and monk's belt, I had a little love affair with monk's belt from the beginning, too, with all the color things you can do, which I have not done in Weaver's Craft really very much yet. Then with the double weave and the double weave blocks, then that led me to a 16-shaft loom, and this is before Dobby looms, and so I was merely designing my four-block double weave things, and of course, even with all the treadles that I had under my 48-inch wide loom, I ran out of treadles for treadling things that I wanted to do just with my double weave, and so I would weave 8 inches and then go down under my loom and rehook all the treadles and then weave another 8 inches, rehook all the treadles again, and I remember being down under my loom one time thinking, now, someday they're going to have a loom for hand weavers where you don't have to do all this sort of stuff. And, of course, before very long, Dobby looms came out. And, of course, now we have Jacquard looms. And sometimes I look and say, well, you know, if those had been out 5 years earlier, I would have just jumped on one of those.
You were a dedicated weaver to go under the... I can't even imagine how many treadles you must have had with a 16-shaft loom.
Well, with a 16-shaft loom, I had 22 treadles, and they were not nearly enough.
The mind boggles trying to keep track of that many.
What I see for Weaver's Craft in the future is just to continue filling out interesting, fun things to weave so that people have as much enjoyment with weaving as I've had over the years.
If people were interested in checking out Weaver's Craft, which I strongly recommend,
I have a website, www.weaverscraft.com. Weaver's Craft is in for the website. It's all one word, no apostrophe. All the back issues are still available. In fact, I have a special for new subscribers that they can get the entire set of back issues at a reduced price from buying individual back issues. Lots of guilds get Weaver's Craft, and a guild member might see a particular issue they want. They can order one back issue or as many as they want or have a subscription, however they want to do it. So there are weavers all over the world who are enjoying Weaver's Craft.
And will you give us a sneak preview of what the next issue is going to be about?
Well, the next one is on barley corn, which is a weave structure. It's really interesting because I wouldn't really call it lace, but it has little floats that make a pattern on the surface. They're weft floats on one side and warp floats on the other. It's a very simple weave structure because every other thread is on shaft one. It makes very nice and easy to weave, easy to treadle little textures.
Well, I'll look for it in my mailbox.
And now, through the miracle of modern telephony, we travel across the globe to Sweden, where we speak with Tina Ingenell of Väv Magazinet. This Swedish magazine is filled with beautiful, clean, elegant, lovely designs. If you haven't ever taken a look at this, you really should. And it is fortunately now available in a English translation. And I was also grateful that Tina was willing to speak to us in English because my Swedish is, well, as you'll hear, painful.
Hey, willkommen.
Hello.
One of the first things I did when I had Tina on the line was ask her how to pronounce the name of her magazine. Here you have it, straight from the publisher herself.
In Swedish, you say Vävmagasinet, but we have also this English name, the Scandinavian Weaving Magazine. And I think in the United States, they usually call it just Väv.
You've been the editor for 4 years. How did you come to be editor?
I have been working with handicraft for several years, and I am educated in weaving. When I have worked as a manager for a handicraft association for 11 years, I thought I would educate myself into journalist, because I think in Sweden it's not so many journalists who are writing about handcraft and weaving. So that was my goal, to use my background as a weaver and be able to write about it. And when I went to the school, I got in contact with Lillemor Johansson, who started the magazine. And after 1 or 2 years, she asked us if we would like to buy the magazine, me and my husband. And my husband is a photographer. And we said, yes, we try.
When did VAV get started?
Started 1982. By Lillemor Johansson. So it's been now for 25 years. In the 80s, when the magazine started, it was a very, very big interest in weaving and in handicraft. That was the time I was educated myself into handcraft, and there was a lot of people weaving. And we didn't have any magazine anywhere where we could read about weaving or what's happening in other parts of the world. I think when Lillemor started the magazine, she got right in time. And now it's been spread all over the world. I think we have so much to write about, not only in Scandinavia, it's also in other countries, but in Scandinavia we have a very deep tradition in weaving, a long tradition.
You've been with the magazine for 4 years. How has it changed since you and your husband took it over?
It always changes when a new person comes into a company, and I think I have a bit of another reflection of handcraft. I think it's so important that young people get interested in weaving, and I think the connection between young people and a bit older people is very important. To learn from them who know how to do things and to get inspired by the old tradition, but also the other way around, that they who are weavers today, I mean weavers for a long time, they can get inspired from young people and a way of looking on materials and techniques. So I think that combination maybe is a part of our work, yes. So when we do an exhibition or when you do a workshop, I think it's very important to invite both young people and older people who know how to do things and maybe from different arts to get inspired, because that's the way to develop things, to get to know each other and to learn new things.
You said in the 1980s weaving was very popular. Has it changed?
At that time we had a lot of courses, so it was many people went to courses in the evenings or in the weekends. The state has now, it's not so much money going to these activities, so you have to pay more by yourself, and that means not so many people as before do it. But in another, it's been another developing that you have a lot of people starting their own activities. So they gathering in a maybe where you live or in a little small house, and they buy some looms and they start weaving like you have, the guild, cool. Sort of developing in weaving in Sweden today. And we are inspired by you, really, the way of going together and do things by yourself and not be so trusting that other people do things for you. So I think that's developing. But in the amount of people, it's less people today. It's not a catastrophe, but it is less people weaving today compared with 20 years ago, because I think young people, they don't weave at schools and they don't see weaving so much when they grow up as the generation before. So we have to show them the weaving. You have to have it in the school, or they come to the exhibitions to see it, because they don't have the looms at home anymore. It's a big work, really, to get the new generation know how to weave. I'm also part of a group that arranged this convergences that we have in Sweden every third year. And next year, September 2008, we will have a big väv mässa, it's sort of convergence in Leksand in Dala Carlia. Then we have this goal that we want to have the schools coming there and invite also young artists and designers to this convergence. It's one of the magazine's goals and also one of the goals for the Weaving Association in Sweden.
Can you tell me a little bit about the Weaving Association?
It started really by the magazine in the middle of the 80s, and it was inspired by the convergences in the United States. It was Lillemor Johansson and her husband, Uno Johansson. They came back from a convergence, and they started this association here in Sweden. Companies, it's weaving teachers, and it's people who are very interested in weaving that are members in this group. What we do in this group, that we are arranging this convergences.
So aside from inspiring new weavers and running this conference every 3 years, what other goals do you have for the magazine?
Well, we want to show how interesting and how much meaning the weaving can be for you, both as a professional weaver. If you want to be a designer, it's very good if you know how to weave, because when you go to the factories and you're a designer and you don't know how the production is working, it's very hard to get any work. So it's the professional level is very important for us to reach, and we know it's a lot of people reading the magazine, so we want to have articles showing how important weaving is for developing design. Also for all the people out in the houses that do this for fun. We want to show how fun weaving is. I think that's the goal, to inspire and to weave more and to feel that you are creative and you can do so many things in your loom.
When you're looking at articles and projects and trying to decide what to put in the magazine, what are you looking for? What is the ideal VAV article or project?
Well, I think all people making magazines, or you making radio programs, you feel it in your stomach, doesn't you? This is interesting for me. It ought to be interesting for more people. I think you feel it. Doesn't have to be new, but it has to have a story to tell. It can be a person doing things, it can be an interesting company, it can be a new material, but you must feel that this is something I have to tell for other people, like a storyteller. That's why you are a journalist. You want to be someone who shares important things with other people.
I'm not that familiar with modern Scandinavian weaving other than what I've seen in VAV. Can you give me some idea of how that's different from weaving elsewhere in the world?
In Scandinavia, we are three countries, and in the Nord part, we are four countries, and we also count Finland. And these four countries are rather different. Norway and Sweden, they are a bit similar, because we have this craft tradition. We learn craft in school, and we have it rather near in history. We have my grandmother was a very skilled craft woman, and it's a lot of people who can connect to craft. In Denmark, they are a little bit more international. They are more modern. They use more modern materials. And they're not so important for them that it's natural material. They can have nylon or polyester. And they're more curious, I think. And in Finland, they have a very hard time in history. Not far away, they were under the Soviet Union. So it's just nearly 100 years they've been by themselves. You know, they are very keen on their own tradition now. They want to save the Finnish tradition and not so interesting in putting new things into their design. But opposite, they are very good in design. They are so clever doing simple things in good material. So it's very hard to say what is Scandinavian weaving, because it's so different from each other. The thing that connects us, if you want to search for that, I think that is tradition, history, that we have done so much by ourselves, and we have generation living on the same area for such a long time, so we can learn from generation to generation. I think that's the special things.
An unbroken tradition.
Exactly. And in Sweden, we haven't had any war for a long, long time. So we have a lot of things saved in the museums and in the castles. We have a lot of things to look at. That's not the situation in Germany, for example. It was so much destroyed, and they have a broken tradition. So it's harder for them to pick up the tradition today, I think. We have it in the surroundings, in the museums, in the farmer house, in the countryside, and so on.
I noticed on your website that VAV is very popular in Japan.
Yes.
Which surprised me. Does that surprise you?
No, really not. Because when I was educated, I had several Japanese students in the same classes. And I think they have also a long tradition in craft and in weaving, but their weaving is different from us. It's nearly always connected to kimono weaving. But in the kimono weaving, it's a lot of techniques, really. Dyeing and weaving techniques. And I think they can see the connection with our weaving, that we have also a lot of technique weaving in Sweden. And they are interested in learning the techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the design, they like the design, this rather clean design with not so many colors and lots of natural colors and the linen and so they're fond of it. But we also think the Americans like this style. When we went to the Convergence last time, we got a lot of opinions about that they like the design. So I think that's maybe something that more people like in the world.
VAV also publishes a line of books. How did that come about?
When we took over 4.5 years ago, it was such a conference planned, and we thought when we were going to the first conference, it would be good for us to have something that we made ourselves. And since I think it's so important to show weaving for young generation, for the children and for the teenagers, we made a book that should be used in the school or in the homes or in the kindergartens to show how easy it is to weave. You don't have to start with a big loom. You can start with a piece of wood or a hanging warp and just to feel the material with your own hands. And then maybe some of the children will get more interested and start to learn how to weave. That was our goal. And that was the first book. And then we were asked to do a book about rag rugs. Its publisher, it's ICA Bokförlag, it's a big publisher here in Sweden. They do a lot of books for different crafts. Well, we thought it was a good way to spread the weaving idea. And here in Sweden, it's a lot of weavers doing rag rugs. We thought if we do a book about rag rugs, we also spread the magazine's name. It was a sort of a...
The rag rug designs in that book, are those from VAV or did you commission new designs?
Well, it's about 45 different rugs in the book, and 35 of the rugs, they are designed for the book. It's never been published. 10 of the rugs we have had in the magazine, but 35 is new. And that's because many people have both the magazine and then they buy the book. And for them, it was important to have new design, really. So we did it that way.
What plans do you have for the future of VAV?
Next year, as I said, 2008, we will have this conference, and then we have a new book. It's for textiles in the home. 2 years later, we hope to be finished with another book that is more for education, because in Sweden, we have had sort of a first education. I went to it when I was about 19 years old. It was about 20 weeks, and then you get to know the most important techniques, plain weave and the basket weaves and the drill and the twill and so on. But these courses, they are not anymore because the high schools, they don't acquire this sort of first knowledge. You can go directly to the high school without knowing anything. And we think that's not so good because we think that education always is good. So we do this book. So if you want to learn to weave the same way we did when we started, you can do it by your own, or you can make a course out of it to learn the main techniques before you can start another education. Or if you just want to learn to weave, you can use this book.
So it's sort of a learning book with new designs. We will work together with a very good designer who do the design, and we do the technique. So that's our plan.
If people in the U.S. and Canada were interested in subscribing to the English edition of FAV or buying some of the wonderful books you've created, many of which are also available in English, what would be the best way to do that?
Well, you can always look at our website. And in the magazine, we have several addresses where you can buy the magazine. We have a Canadian contact, the Camilla Valley. You can also buy it directly from us. The best thing is to look at the website. All the information are there, numbers and email and so on.
And we will have a link to that in the show notes if people want to check it out. It is a wonderful magazine and one of the few magazines dedicated to hand weaving in the world. So I strongly encourage everyone listening to go to the website and check it out. You will not be disappointed. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much for asking me to come.
In doing the research for this episode, I discovered several weaving magazines that I had never heard of, like Australian Hand Weaver and Spinner. I found this on Amazon. There's no cover art, and I've not seen an issue, so I can't tell you whether it's a good magazine or not, but I'm intrigued. Perhaps one of you has subscribed or read issues of Australian Hand Weaver and Spinner and would make a note in the comments so we'll know. There's also a British magazine called Journal for Weavers, Spinners, and Dyers. Again, I found this on Amazon. If anybody knows anything about this, let me know. Other magazines in the U.S. that I subscribe to and enjoy are Complex Weavers Journal. Now, this you have to be a member of Complex Weavers to get. But Complex Weavers is a really cool organization. Most weaving information out in the world right now goes up to about 4 shafts. Maybe 8 shafts and stops. Complex Weavers takes that ball and runs with it. If you're looking for articles about 16 shaft, 24 shaft, Complex Weavers is the place to go. They also do a lot of stuff in 4 shaft and a lot of stuff in 8 shaft because weaving complicated or interesting or intricate fabric doesn't require a complicated loom. I've got a link to Complex Weavers up on the show notes. I highly recommend you check it out. It's a great journal. It's not color because that would be too expensive, but wonderful, wonderful articles and the kind of weaving information that I haven't seen anywhere else. There's a journal called Twist. Now, this is for braiders and people doing things like kumihimo, onamara dye or ataka dye, and card weaving, band weaving. It is done by Braider's Hand, a thin magazine with some color pictures. It is the go-to place if you are interested in inkle type textiles. And of course, the Hand Weavers Guild of America produces Shuttle, Spindle, and Dye Pot, which is a wonderful magazine talking about what HGA is up to and some of the best weavers in the world and recent competitions. And it is filled with gorgeous, glossy photos. I will have an article in the summer Shuttle, Spindle, and Dye Pot where I'll be talking about WeaveCast, how it got started, and where I hope it goes in the future. Before I tell you my tale of torrid summertime romance, let's get in the mood with a little music. This is Blue Summer Day by D.C. Anderson.
Oh, the cats are laying in the yard next door and they turn me a sleepy eye. Rolling in the grass, spring so fast to a bird or butterfly. And it's a blue summer day. Breezes blow and curtains sway. A newcomer, blue summer day. So the felines file to the backyard fence. They crouch in a lethal row. Blue jays flee from the apple tree. Bees buzz to and fro. And it's a blue summer day. With clotheslines hung in 100 shades of newcomer, blue summer day. And a loud lawnmower in a yard somewhere brings a memory to my ear. from the past. I smell the grass, see the green so clear, and it's a blue summer day. Spiders spinning, pipers playing, newcomer, blue summer day. When the lawns are mowed and the laundry's stowed, the dusk is drawing near. We'll light the torches on our porches and drink ourselves a beer. 'Cause it's a blue summer day, with streaks of red and hints of gray. A newcomer, blue summer day. 'Cause it's a blue summer day, with streaks of red and hints of gray. A newcomer, blue summer day. It is a true wonder, blue summer day.
And now it's time for a tale of summer love. Now, my first love is and will always be my husband. It was our 10th anniversary this year, and we didn't make it to New Zealand as we'd threatened in a previous episode. We priced it out, kind of gasped, and decided that staying home could be romantic too, and wouldn't involve 17 hours in a plane. For our anniversary, we took Kai to a sitter, and in the afternoon, at around the same time of day we got married, repeated our vows to each other. Just to each other, alone, holding hands. I can't tell you how romantic that was. Enough mushy stuff. On to my torrid summer love affair. Color, or more specifically, painted warps. It all started with the Teach a Friend to Weave contest last episode. One of the prizes for that was a hand-painted warp made by me. And three of the randomly chosen winners ended up picking that prize. And so I was like, why not? I could make three. And then I went to a warp painting workshop held by Roberta Lowe at Fibers Etc. and learned how to paint protein fibers, which is something I'd never done before. And there's just something that happens to me when colors smack into each other and merge into a painted warp. I get giddy. I get lightheaded. I mean, I was standing in the studio painting the warp with this goofy grin on my face. When you open them after the dye has been set, it is like Christmas on the 4th of July. There are fireworks, and it's just, I don't know. I was talking to other people at the workshop, and we didn't understand it, but it was happening to all of us. And it's just marvelous, magical, wonderful. So I wound a warp, and then another warp. And then I became rather obsessed and stayed up one night winding warp after warp after warp. There's just so much design potential in a white warp. You get to pick set, you get to pick texture, length, width, and read, and then you have this blank canvas to paint on. Then I went to a weaving retreat where Judith McKenzie McCoon showed me what dark brown looked like overdyed, because I had always known about overdyeing light colors, but I never even considered overdyeing dark colors. And this skein she showed me that was buffalo fiber was unbelievably rich and jewel-toned. I came home and I looked at my stash in a whole new light. Now, my stash has been largely built of weavers' garage sales. I am very lucky to live in a part of the country where there are a lot of weavers and they occasionally de-stash. So I have a lot of the colors that no one will weave. That's like beige or mauve. And I started pulling all of these colors down, these colors that just do not inspire me. I know there are people for whom those colors are their colors, but I am a rich, intense, jewel tone kind of person. I pulled them all down. I wound them into warps. It was exciting. It was like the first time you put a warp on a loom and it goes on flawlessly. So I was winding warps of beige and puce green and every color that had ever offended me in my stash. And some of these yarns have been hanging around in my stash. And every time I wound a warp, it was just like, take that, you boring color. I didn't worry about weft. I didn't even give a thought to weft. I did not, when I was painting my warps, dye coordinating wefts. I mean, that would have been really organized. But this was about passion. This was not about being organized. And I didn't worry about what the warps would be for. I didn't worry about if I was making scarves or shawls or fabric for clothing or dish towels. I didn't worry about it. I wound warps. Again, it's about passion, not planning. Sometimes you just have to give in to that impulse. I was swept off my feet by color and warp painting and that magical moment of discovery of seeing what the dye does on the yarn. Because dye does a different thing on a mauve warp than it does on a white one. It would be lovely to wind a warp that was one mauve and one beige together, like a shadow weave or a double weave warp, and then paint that, because then each thread would have a slightly different color from its neighbor, and it would give it kind of a shimmery iridescence. I'm going to try that. I can't wait to try that. I have just been having a marvelous time with the summer weather and the color. The yarn that had been languishing in my stash, instead of ugly cones of oppressive beige and pastels that would never work for me, I have jewel-toned painted warps hanging on a rod across the back of my studio. They make my heart sing, and that's an important thing. If you have stuff in your stash that does not delight you, think about overdyeing it. If you don't have a plan in mind, then what comes out of the dye pot will be a pleasant surprise. But as much fun as I'm having now with color and dyeing and playing in the sunshine, I know summer romances aren't meant to last. They're flings that absorb us and make our heart beat faster. But summer is short-lived in the Pacific Northwest. After a few months of this, the clouds will come in, the temperature will drop back down to 50 degrees, and there'll be so much rain that I won't be able to get outside. It's a bittersweet love. It's something that is made all the more precious by the fact that it doesn't last. So in September, I'll put my dye pot back in storage, and the gray blanket of winter will come over Washington and shroud the sun for months on end. But I'll have a wall of color and the sweet memory of brightly painted warps hanging to dry in the sun. And I know that next summer, I'll see my love again. That's all for this episode. And now it's time to get warped, because everyone knows you have to be warped to weave. Next episode, we'll be talking about electronic weaving. We're going to talk with a weaver who has woven electronic circuits that interact with the viewer. It's very cool stuff. We're also going to talk a little bit about Dobby looms and computerized weaving, and it should be a lot of fun. WeaveCast is brought to you through the generosity of our donating listeners. This episode, I'd like to thank Tamara, Kaz, the Alaska Scholarly Salvage, Diane, Georgia, Nikki, Jean, and Allison. Thank you. Funding for this show also comes from the Hand Weavers Guild of America and the Seattle Weavers Guild. I'd like to thank the musical artists who shared their talents on today's show. We had Blue Summer Day by DC Anderson. I found this song on the IODA PromoNet Network. The theme song is, as always, Limerick Rake by Celtic Reboot, who's available on the PodSafe Music Network. Information about these artists and their work is available on the show notes.